Hello, friends. I'd like to thank our newest patrons, Marg Daly, Al Hannah, Jill Forrest, Gabby Williams, McKenna Buckley. That's such a great name. Narelle Arthur, Janelle Browning. I mean, they're all good names. Don't get me wrong. Janelle Browning, Rachel May Shields. You see, that's the mother in me. You can't compliment one person without going back and saying no, but everyone's great. Justin Murphy, you're great as well. Mark Colleen, Kate Alyssa, L. You've only got one name. No, sorry, it's L-E. Oh, these letters are so small. Steph Gibbs, Johnny Tsitsakis, whatever it is tops. Michelle Harobin, Georgia Mirabile, it's all good. Joe Pasper, Tony Horsley, Rachel Fabry, thank you. You're all great at your own thing. That's what we learn as parents is very important to say. For more info about signing up as a patron, visit the link in our show notes in your app. Patrons receive special perks like a patron-only newsletter. I'm excited about this. We've been working on what to put in it, and we just realized we wanted to put links of some really great articles that we've been reading. I like to read true crime articles at nighttime before I go to bed. That's gross, isn't it? But I know that you're all into it too. So we're sharing them with you. Some of our faves, long form articles. Love them. Also, we will have a special episode, a special Narelle Fraser bonus episode just for you patrons. That's fun, isn't it? Also, an Ask Me Anything special episode is coming up. So if you have a question for Emily and I, hang in there. It's coming up. All you have to do is email us at hello@australiantruecrimepodcast.com with AMA in the subject, as in Ask Me Anything, and include your question, first name, and suburb. That would be terrific. Keep listening to Australian True Crime because we've got a special giveaway coming up for both listeners and patrons across Australia. You'll hear about those details in next week's episode. Okay, enough of me raving on. Let's get on with the show. Please be advised this podcast contains descriptions of graphic violence and is not appropriate for children.
They argued a lot, and a lot of it was due to drugs and money. I suppose you'd have to say they're almost penniless, really. Just out of nowhere, knock on the door. Oh, well, I don't actually think they knocked on the door. They just walked in. Get your clothes on. We're going to have a little chat. There's nothing about going up to Spencer Street. Nothing. They don't even talk about going to the caravan.
The life of Andrew Preston is not the kind that makes it in the headlines or even lives in our memories for very long. Andrew was a young suburban guy who drifted around the fringes of Australia's biggest cities, living in various kinds of temporary accommodation, with various kinds of temporary girlfriends, working in various kinds of temporary jobs, and taking pretty heavy drugs. He's not the kind of guy anyone even really notices is missing, except his mum.
This is Australian True Crime with Michelle Laurie and Emily Webb. Come with us as we go beyond the news cycle to find out how people become killers, how people become victims, and what happens next.
Jeffrey Kevin Mitchell, on the other hand, is the kind of guy whose family is still fighting to get him back almost 20 years later. But we'll come to that. First, let's get the full tragic story from Narelle Fraser, who can introduce these characters and others in all of their light and shade.
In 2002, Jeff was 40, had a wife, Leanne, and two kids, living a very normal life in suburban Melbourne, both dealing with all the usual difficulties of bringing up a couple of kids. And there is absolutely no doubt that Jeff Mitchell adored his two kids. He was also a very hard-working dad. Mum Leanne, she was working as well, and they'd been together about 8 years. So just going back in 2001, Leanne was working at a company in, I think it was Bayswater, and she met Andrew at a workplace. And, you know, like a lot of workplace relationships, you know, some are just friends, others go on to get married, all sorts of things. But her and Andrew developed a relationship which turned into a sexual one in 2002. Andrew had come down from New South Wales with his girlfriend, and he was a chronic user of amphetamines and dabbed in heroin. His girlfriend was a prostitute and a drug user as well. I don't know whether Leanne was using drugs prior to meeting Andrew, but certainly after she met Andrew, she started using, or she was using, marijuana, and at the very least, and she was using it reasonably frequently. Now, also where Leanne and Andrew worked, Leanne's brother worked there as well. His name was Gavin, or is Gavin. And Gavin and Andrew had a few differences, I suppose you could say, and actually had fisticuffs one night at a work function. So there was a bit of tension between Gavin and Andrew. I think at one point there they, oh, I don't know, had a fight on the table, and it ended up them wrestling on the ground. Like, it was quite a serious fight. But Gavin was angry. He didn't like the way Andrew was treating his sister. Gavin and Leanne were very close. He didn't like the influence that Andrew was having on Leanne. He felt that Andrew was getting Leanne into drugs and, you know, just going down that path.
Was Leanne and Jeff
yes.
still married at this point?
Yes.
So it was an affair. Okay.
Yeah. Gavin was also good mates with Jeff. It's his brother-in-law. So I suppose Gab's in the middle of everything. Jeff began to suspect that Leanne might have been using drugs, and he confronted her about it many times. I think he might have found some paraphernalia, you know, some drug paraphernalia or something in the car, and she kept saying, no, I'm not using it, it's for someone else or whatever. Anyway, eventually comes around. In early 2002, she admits that she is using drugs, but she's also in a relationship with a bloke at work called Andrew Preston. Jeff says, I want you out of here. And she did. She leaves Jeff and the two kids and goes to starts living with Andrew. So Leanne and Andrew started to live wherever they could find a bed, sort of like couch surfing, I suppose you'd have to say. So they'd stay in a motel for a couple of nights. Then they'd go and stay with some friends. And then they'd go and stay, say, at Leanne's mum and dad's. Like, Leanne came from a really loving family. Like, Leanne's family, like Leanne and Gavin were like that. You know, they were very close. Mum and dad were really good people. But how you would actually accept your daughter with a new boyfriend, I don't know if they knew he was a drug addict, but I think it would have been fairly obvious. I don't know. Anyway, bottom line is they were couch surfing for a while. But in mid-2002, Leanne happens to find a caravan at a caravan park in Lilydale. Leanne and Andrew's relationship was very volatile. They argued a lot, and a lot of it was due to drugs and money, because what happened is that Andrew would spend all his money on drugs. So they had, and I don't know, maybe Leanne was too, but the bottom line is they had no money. So they're buying drugs and no food. So they're not eating. And so we know that Andrew was spending a lot of money on drugs. I suppose you'd have to say they're almost penniless.
Yeah.
Really. And Gavin and Jeff weren't happy with the way Leanne was being treated. Gavin would tell Jeff, you know, oh, he's a prick to her and all this sort of stuff. In late April 2002, Andrew and Leanne have this argument, and he leaves, and he was going to find some money to get drugs. Where you find money to get drugs. Anyway,
yeah.
That's a whole new story. It's probably other people's houses, cars, whatever. So Leanne and Jeff, I don't quite know why this happened and when it was organised, but it was some important party and they were both going to go together and pretend that, you know, everything yeah. was going along just fine. So they go to this party, but they can because Andrew's gone and bought drugs, so he's not around. Anyway, so I'm not sure when it was arranged, but at the time I thought it was a bit strange, and I don't think Andrew knew that she was going. But after the party, Jeff dropped her off at the caravan, just dropped her off, and I've got a feeling that maybe that night Jeff realised that he wanted her back. Something is shifted in Jeff, I think, where initially he's angry with her and all that, and then he's starting to think, I really want her back, and that prick's taken her from me, all that sort of stuff. We know that Jeff wasn't happy that Leanne was so unhappy. It was starting to affect him. Leanne and Andrew were going down a very unhappy path. So Monday the 29th of April, after 10 days of living in the caravan, Leanne speaks to Jeff over the phone at work. Now, I'm not sure who rang who, but somehow Jeff is talking to Leanne on the phone. She's very upset. She's crying. She's speaking about her and Andrew's constant arguing, the lack of money, how unhappy she is. And at some stage, we know from telephone records that Gavin has also spoken to Jeff Mitchell, that he's also spoken to him on this particular day. We don't know what that phone call was about, but we know that there was phone calls. Something has transpired between Gavin and Jeff, and they have arranged to go up to the caravan that night to have a chat to Andrew. So Gavin and Jeff have decided we're going to go up and have a chat to this prick, and we're going to tell him to start treating Leanne with a bit more respect, all that sort of stuff. So around dinner time that night, Leanne and Andrew, they're in the caravan, and Gavin and Jeff appear just out of nowhere, knock on the door. Oh, well, I don't actually think they knocked on the door. They just walked in. And they say to Andrew, get your clothes on. We're going to have a little chat. So I think at the time Andrew just had on a pair of boxers or something like that. Anyway, so Andrew didn't want to go. But Jeff isn't the sort of person that would take no for an answer. Probably about 6 foot tall. He looks like a bikey, okay. A big softy. But, you know, he's got the bald head. He's not somebody that you'd say no to, yeah. I don't think, in that sense. So Leanne watches as Andrew puts on some clothes and off they go. Jeff and Gavin return a couple of hours later and they tell Leanne, don't have to worry, you won't be seeing him again. He's gone for good and he won't be back. So, and she says, you know, like, where is he? What have you done? And they said, look, we've taken him to Spencer Street. We took him to the railway station. We put him on a train to Sydney. See you later. So Leanne had no reason to disbelieve that. That's what they said. That's what she thought. But not only Jeff saying that, but her brother is saying that as well. So over the next few weeks, Leanne is trying to contact Andrew, but she can't do it. Andrew's mum is starting to contact Leanne and say, you know, where's Andrew? I don't know where he is. Tells her the story. Oh, look, you know, he was taken to Spencer Street Station on Monday the 29th of April and he's caught a train, so he should be there somewhere. About a month later, Leanne leaves the caravan and goes back to live with Jeff and the children. They've sorted out their issues. Andrew's, you know, he's gone back on the train. He's gone to Newcastle, Sydney. So her and Jeff get back together and they go back to living their normal life. However, Andrew's mum keeps ringing and Leanne keeps repeating all she knows, the train, Spencer Street Station. But Andrew's mum, Marguerite was her name, and she was becoming increasingly concerned. So she couldn't get anything from Leanne, so she rings Andrew's girlfriend. She doesn't know what's going on. I think about July 2002, so what's that, another month later. So he's gone, let's say, missing on the 29th of April. In July, Preston's mum thinks, nah, there's something wrong here. So she fought, and again, it's that motherly instinct.
Yeah, I was just thinking
that. How many mothers just go to the police and say, I know my kids, I know something's wrong? It happens. So it's that gut instinct that I talk about a lot. Anyway, so she formally reports Andrew missing to the missing persons people in Newcastle in Sydney. What happens is the process works so that the local Lilydale detectives, which is where Andrew has been living, they're notified by our LEAP system that there's a missing person in their area. So they do the initial investigations. They interview Leanne. She tells them what she knew, interviews Jeff and Gavin. Just when was the last time you saw him, all that sort of stuff. And they take statements from the three of them. And they're trying to establish, remember I've said before that missing persons investigations are really difficult because the first thing you've got to establish if an offence has occurred. With Andrew, well, the mother's saying he's missing, Leanne's saying he's got on a train, you know, so is he missing? Is there an offence? So you've got to try and establish that first off. So that's why missing persons don't do it initially, because 9 times out of 10, they've gone missing for a reason, as in they want a break and all that sort of stuff.
And it could have been reasonable to think that Andrew, with his kind of history and the lifestyle he was leading, could have just gone, right, you know, I'm off.
Transient, just decides I'll go somewhere else. I'll find someone else. That's what they tend to do. Everything that the Lilydale detectives do is uploaded onto a special system for investigators, and it's called Interpose. That's another system as opposed to LEAP. So we're monitoring the investigation. We're monitoring, because he's a missing person, we are monitoring. Remember me telling you about the analyst, and all they do is check all these things and all that. Anyway, so we're monitoring it, and the bosses all have a confab and they decide which ones we're going to take over. Remember that I was saying that the analyst will often have a gut feeling that something's not right. She puts it to the bosses, or he puts it to the bosses, and they say, yep, let's take that on. Some we take on and we find that there's no offence and we find them. But this one, again, it's a little bit, there's something not quite right. So we have one of the local detectives come on to our crew with Missing Persons Unit, part of the Homicide Squad. One of the Lilydale detectives comes on because he's got the knowledge of the investigation so far, but he's got the local knowledge. They're very good at that. That's their sort of forte. So to bring them onto the team, it works really well. Anyway, he comes onto the team, and an integral part, I've got to say. There's three statements. We've got a statement from Leanne, a statement from Gavin, and a statement from Jeff. We've taken statements because they are not suspects by, we don't know what's happened. You cannot take a statement from a suspect because you've got to caution, you've got to formally interview them. So we are taking a statement because they can help us, you know, with the investigation initially. So now what we notice is that in Leanne's statement, she says that the boys come up to the caravan and they took Andrew away down to Spencer Street, you know, and she tells the story. But in Gavin's statement and also Jeff's statement, there's nothing about going up to Spencer Street. Nothing. They don't even talk about going to the caravan. And it's there and you think, it was a little bit of an aha moment, sort of. Why would Jeff and Gavin not mention that? And you think, ooh, that's interesting.
Did you think, these guys have totally done it?
No, but I did think, oh, yeah, I think we're on to something.
Yep.
Because at this stage also, what's Leanne got to, you know, maybe Leanne's in on this story as well. We don't know. But if you've got something like that and you're interviewing them, for instance, and you keep it to yourself, and when you're interviewing them and they might start talking about, oh, you know, the 29th of April on, I went home and I had dinner and I went to bed. It's really powerful in an interview to be able to say, now, I have some information that you attended the caravan. Mm. And you can actually see the blood. Their whole demeanour changes because it's like, oh, shit. So they, you know, backtrack and, oh, that, oh, well, I meant to say, oh, didn't I? Oh, I forgot to tell you that. Oh, yeah, that's really good to watch that. So they aren't suspects, but they're certainly persons of interest now. But the fact that they'd completely ignored to the visit to the caravan was good. So investigations continue for months. So we've got a bit of an idea now about Gavin and Jeff, but we've got to sort of work around the back. We follow every one of those little burrows. Mm. We go and speak to everyone at the work. We speak to, oh, I don't know, neighbours, ex-girlfriends, everyone else in the caravan park. We go and get logs of, you know, who's in and out of the caravan. The bloke at the caravan park often would take Reggio. Mm. No, their car wasn't there on the 29th. Like, you know, what's going on? We are now of the opinion that they're possibly involved and they've taken him somewhere, but we forensically examine his car, nothing. We don't have any CCTV footage. We've got nothing. But we were starting to have genuine fears that he'd been murdered because his mum, you know, he's not in Newcastle. And we had taken two statements from Gavin. We were clarifying certain points that he'd made in previous statements. Now, taking a number of statements isn't unusual, and he's certainly not a suspect at this point, so he can still take a statement. But what we're trying to do is clarify certain information that may have come up since the last interview. So anyway, we're doing all these different investigations. We actually speak to the ex-girlfriend. We spent a lot of time with her, and oh my God, she was very, very hard work. and she'd ring at all times of the day and night with information. Some of it was good, some of it was just a waste of time.
So you're uncovering, as you're doing your investigations, you're obviously unpicking this kind of very complicated relationship situation.
But with an investigation, it can lead you down all these paths, and a lot of the paths never come to anything. And you could spend a month on one particular avenue and then you find out, and then you just got to move on to the next one. So you've wasted a whole month on something. But that happens all the time. Yeah. Like that can happen for 6 months you're on a particular avenue. Andrew's mum, Marguerite, oh, God love Marguerite. Like she was dogged in her determination for us to find Andrew. Oh, she would ring every week without fail. She was a heartbroken mum who was just desperate for us to find Andrew. April 2003, so this is 12 months down the track. This is how long all this stuff takes, you know. But 12 months down the track, we decide we've had enough of this. We're going to bring Leanne in and we're going to bring Gavin in. A team go and get Leanne and ask, can you come to the police station? We need to talk about a few things. And another group does this with Gavin. We detail with Leanne our concerns about Gavin and Jeffrey's statement. She said, I want to speak to Gavin. And we said, well, actually, he's in another police station. So we were hoping that this might happen, but you never know. It can all turn to shit very quickly, you know, and things don't work. But we did this because we knew they were close. And she says to him, I want you to tell the police everything because I can't keep it to myself anymore.
2 years after the night Leanne Mitchell's boyfriend, Andrew Preston, was escorted from their caravan by her brother Gavin and her husband Jeffrey, Leanne is sitting in a police station interview room asking to see her brother. When he arrives, she says she wants him to tell the police everything. What does that mean? Will he do it? And how much of everything does Leanne know? How long has she known it? We'll find out after the break. If you're enjoying this episode, by the way, you might like to listen to episode 72. That's the cold case disappearance of Katie O'Shea. A link to that past episode will be in the show notes. Coming up on Australian True Crime, there's been a very recent update in this case involving the parole board. But first, what is Gavin's reaction to his sister's insistence that he tell the police everything about the disappearance of her former boyfriend, Andrew Preston?
Gavin gets very, very upset and he's crying, telling her he loves her and, oh, I don't know what to do, I'm so frightened, you know, I'm frightened of Jeff, I'm frightened of the repercussions. And Leanne said, Gavin, you've got to tell him, you know. So bottom line is, with encouragement from Leanne, he tells the other police and obviously, you know, there's all the communication. But he was so petrified of Mitchell and feared for his life that that's why he's never said anything until this particular day. Leanne's very worried about his safety, but Gavin is as well. But not only Gavin, like Leanne knows Jeff and she's concerned that Jeff might, you know, do something as well. In Gavin's interview, he's formally interviewed by way of a tape recording because he said, yes, I'm going to have to tell you. So he gives his version of events. And in this version, he completely disassociates himself with the murder of Andrew. He just happened to be there, but he took no part. He stated that he'd given us a false statement due to the fear that, you know, Mitchell would murder him as well if he told the truth of what happened. But Gavin stated that he was there, but he played absolutely no part and he didn't think he had any choice but to go along with it. So what he says happened is on the Monday the 29th, he's spoken to Jeff at work during the day. They're both pissed off at the way Andrew's treating Leanne. So they decide that Jeff is going to pick up Gavin, they're going to go up to the caravan and that they're going to have a word with him. Jeff comes and picks up Gavin and on the way, they must talk about what they're going to do because they arrive at the caravan, but they park out the front of the caravan park. And they walk in, they instruct Andrew, get some clothes on, we're going to have a little chat. Leanne's present in the caravan. Now, I don't think there's any doubt that Andrew felt compelled to go with him. He was pushed into the back seat and I'm pretty sure he was tied up, maybe blindfolded at the very least, something like that. What happens is Jeff drives with Preston in the back, Andrew, and Andrew is pleading for them to stop. You know, what do you want? I'll tell you anything. Anyway, Jeff, this is according to Gavin, Jeff is very much in control of the situation, and Andrew was clearly scared for his life, but Gavin was shitting himself as well. And Gavin didn't want to do anything to upset Jeff because he was scared himself. I'd have to say Jeff could be a very intimidating man, and I can imagine being ill at ease with him. Times along the way, while they're driving, Jeff turns around and gives Andrew a backhander, like, you know, shut up, because Andrew's starting to, you know, really know that things are not looking good. He wants to know where we're going, what are we doing. That's why Jeff turns around and just, you know, shut the fuck up. Anyway, so what happens is Jeff drives to a deserted track off a main road around Powelltown, and he keeps turning off from one track to another, and they come upon a logging track, which is really in no man's land.
Yeah, Powelltown's, it's logging's the main industry there. It's pretty remote, pretty bushy. Yeah.
Yeah, so there's a dispute over what happens next, because Gavin gives us a version, and later I'll tell you in a minute, but Jeff gives us a version as well. And one says it's the other, and the other one says it's, you know, so
it's he said, he said.
Yeah, yeah. But what Gavin states is that Mitchell's done everything while he watched. You know, he was behind the car and saw nothing. But what Gavin says is that Jeff pulls off this little logging track, drags Andrew out of the car, abuses him for breaking up his family, and then he says to Andrew, get on your knees. So Jeff then goes to the back of the four-wheel drive and he grabs a screwdriver. And Gavin then sees Mitchell about to stab Andrew in the back with the screwdriver, but he looks away because he can't stand the look of it. But what he hears is a moan. When he looks back, he sees Jeff removing the screwdriver from Andrew's back, and he wipes it and he puts it back in the four-wheel drive, the screwdriver. But to finish him off, Gavin says that Jeff injects him with air, and he then pushes him down an embankment and they leave without saying a word to one another. That seemed a bit unbelievable to me, but this is not unusual for somebody to, you know, say, oh, look, I was there, but I had no, you know. But at the moment, we have to go with what Gavin's saying. Gavin reckons that he was petrified but also complicit because he was just so scared himself. I must admit, apparently injecting somebody with air can kill them. I'd never heard of that before. But apparently forensic experts gave evidence in court to say that it would be most unusual and almost impossible to kill someone the way that Gavin said that Jeff did. We're really still not sure, because the experts say it's almost impossible. However, I don't know about injecting people with air, but the two of them believe that Andrew's dead because he's slumped over. He's never said another word after being stabbed in the back with the screwdriver, and all Gavin hears is the moaning after the screwdriver, and then it stopped. Heard nothing else. They push Andrew down an embankment and drive off, believing he's dead. Now, the deal with Gavin was to charge him, because he's given us all this information and he took us out there, which I'll tell you about in a minute, but we charged him with accessory after the fact with the information he provided us with. We couldn't charge him with murder or an accomplice even for that matter, or even providing a false statement, because we've got nothing to prove it was false. So we decide, or the powers that be decide, he's going to be charged with accessory after the fact. We knew that Gavin was the weak link. They're often the people that you will try and concentrate on because they're the ones that are going to fall over. Yeah. But also, due to Gavin's previous statements, we had difficulty establishing what was correct and what was incorrect, because his statements were obviously viewed with a fair bit of caution. But that's his account of what's happened, so we have to go with that. We asked him if he was prepared to speak to Mitchell. We want Gavin to gain some credibility from us, you know, like he's saying, oh, this is what's happened. Well, if you're saying this is what's happened, how about you speak to Jeff and we get you to talk about the offence? So what it's called is, it's a very legal and acceptable tool for gathering evidence, and it's called a pretext conversation. What it is we ask the witness if he's prepared to speak to Jeff over the phone to try and get him to talk about the offence whilst it's being recorded, and it can be used in evidence at court, right? We cannot touch the recording device in any way, shape or form. We can't press the on button. We can't have anything to do with it. We also can't instruct Gavin on what to say and what not to say. Got to give him some parameters. So all we ask him to do is we say that we'd like you to talk about the offence. That's all we can say. He might ask questions. Oh, what do I say? And what you always say is, Gavin, I'm not allowed to legally. I cannot tell you what to say and what not to say. I'm just going to have to leave it with you, but we just want you to talk about the offence. He tried to get Jeff to talk about it, but Jeff wouldn't. There'd been something on the news that night and Gav rings him and says, oh, mate, I think they're on to us. The news saying that the cops are going up to Paletown. But Mitchell didn't say anything. It was sort of like, hey, mate, don't stress. They could be going up there for anything. What he said wasn't worth anything evidentiary-wise. So what happens is Gavin takes us up to Paletown. He agreed to accompany us, but we couldn't find the logging track. It was dark, you know, and remembering that Gavin at the time was under enormous pressure. He says he was, but I assume he was. And it was dark, and Gavin doesn't know where they are. Yeah. He knew it was Paletown anyway, so he says, oh, we went off left. Oh, no, hang on, go back to the main road. I think it was there. Oh, could have been down there. You know, it was all over the ship. We find this track that we believe, Gavin believes he's 98% sure it's it. Anyway, so the following day we get the Vic Roads or whoever it is that does the logging tracks, because we find out that that particular track 3 weeks prior had been resurfaced. So we speak to the graders and all that. You know, no, they hadn't found anything. Anyway, bottom line is we had to dig it up again with these huge, big machines. Anyway, we never found him. On the day we've got him in different police stations, Gavin worked quite well. The pretext didn't work, but he goes up to Paletown. But with Leanne, we ask her if she'd consider wearing a wire, a covert listening device, in an attempt to try and get Jeff to talk about the offence. Anyway, she agreed and we made it happen. We had lots of police on standby. We had plainclothes police driving past, because it's all in public. If it was at a house, we would never have done it, because we can't manage Leanne, I suppose. But anyway, we had cops dressed as garbage collectors. We had a caravan just around the corner. If it all turned to shit, we had a plan B. And the risk assessment is huge in this sort of an operation, because really at this stage we think Jeff's a murderer. And also we're putting her in a fairly dangerous position. But it is her husband. And Leanne said, yes, let's do it. So she was really comfortable. We met at McDonald's in Cheltenham, wired her up with very little instructions other than to try and get Jeff to talk about the offence. And she was meeting him about a kilometre away. So anyway, she leaves McDonald's and we're strategically placed everywhere. And she's talking to Mitchell, Jeff, for about 30 minutes. We can see her talking. We can't hear her, but we can see her talking anyway. She comes back to the police station and we're like, we are all beaming and we're really happy. And she was very happy, so we were as well. She said, oh, it went really well. And we're all laughing away, because she told us that at one point he says to her, are you actually wearing a wire or something, are you? And it was like, oh, my God. But somehow she deflected it and, oh, yeah, Jeff, you know, of course I'd do that and help the coppers or, you know, something like that. She said before we've started listening to it, she said, oh, it went really well. He said that him and Gavin had injected Andrew with air up in Paletown, that they threw him down an embankment. So we all sit around and we set up the recording device and have a listen. Oh, my God. There was nothing.
No.
There was complete silence. It hadn't worked. We don't quite know, you know, whether it was Leanne didn't push the right thing or it was fitted wrong. We don't know what happened. But I will never forget that day. It was almost like the worst day of my career, because we had the chance to get a murderer and we lost it. And seriously, I thought it was a terrible terrible day. Mm-hmm. And it was like this big black cloud came down on everyone, and we got the techs in to try and
retrieve stuff. Yeah, and
no. Complete silence. So what we did then, we ended up taking a statement from her. But look, you know, and a statement of her recollection of the meeting, but really it wasn't
it's
almost
not, as
not worth the paper.
As, yeah.
No. Anyway, not to be outdone. What we do then is the next week we say, let's just give it one more try. She picks up the kids Friday night from his work with us behind her all the way. She actually comes up with this, what about if I ring Jeff and I say that, you know, Gavin's told me everything, which he had. We knew this by this stage. And she said, what about if I just say I need to speak to him? And we thought, yeah, that'd probably work. So anyway, that's what she does. And this time it worked like magic because we knew Gavin was safe by this stage because he's in our custody. So she says, Gavin's just told me everything, Jeff. I can't believe it. I need to talk to you. So he says, well, where do you want to meet? So they meet outside his work. Anyway, again, she's wearing a wire. But this time, oh, my God, she was just brilliant. And so he goes something like that they'd both gone up there. Gav had helped him. Jeff said to Leanne, yeah, we injected him. Both of us did, though. It wasn't just me. And he said, we've got rid of his jacket. You'll never find that. I don't know where I've got rid of it, but you'll never find it. It was somewhere up there. And he said to her, I was just going to leave the body, you know, like it was, but Gav suggested getting a couple of sticks and covering it over. And then Gav, he did, he grabbed a couple of sticks and threw it over the body as camouflage. And they'd talked about this on the way up, what they were going to do, like it was all very planned. This is what Jeff's saying, completely different to Gavin. And Leanne says to him, quote, I didn't think you could ever kill somebody in cold blood. And he says, neither did I. I still don't know how I did it.
Oh, my God. It's like out of a movie. Yeah, it always feels like what you expect a conversation to go like.
Yeah. And really, Jeff said that Gavin was always, he was in agreeance. They did everything together. Yep. Jeff says at one point there that, he said, I'm feeling fucking paranoid. Geez, I'm paying big time now for what I did. I'm so fucking stressed. Paranoid? Are you kidding me? Really? You've just killed somebody and you're wondering why you're paranoid.
And just living with that. I wonder if people think when they do something like that, they don't understand the lingering effect of it. Like they think, oh, that problem's out of the way, but no. It's actually the haunting.
It plays on their mind.
Did Gavin get any repercussions?
No. So he said, Jeff said in the end that he did it over Leanne and the fact that no one fucks with me about me and my kids. He thought that Andrew was going to take his kids off him, like and get custody or whatever. Mitchell, he was sentenced to 18 years with a minimum of 14 on the bottom. He appealed. I can't remember on what grounds, but basically he got 6 months off. Apparently his behaviour inside has been commended. He's been such a good boy. And Gavin was charged with being accessory.
Okay.
But Gavin never did time. But we've never found Andrew.
The thing is, you need to find Andrew for Marguerite. Like Marguerite would like to know where Andrew is.
Yeah.
It's just such a sad story because do they just not know what happened to Andrew or are they not, like as in where his body went, why haven't they sort of been able to tell you more?
Well, Jeff spoke to Leanne. But he never really spoke to us. The evidence we have from Jeff is through Leanne and the wire.
Yeah.
But Jeff has never wanted, he's never, I hope I'm right, I don't believe Jeff ever told us.
Okay.
He told Leanne and that's how we found out. But no, I think Gavin genuinely wanted to try and find, I think he genuinely thought this was the, you know, the logging track. But no, we've never found Andrew. But I would love to be able to find him for his mum. You know, at the very least.
Well, yeah. I guess Jeff will probably be eligible for his parole soon.
Yeah, he will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting that you should have asked that question, Emily, because just 2 days after this episode was recorded in mid-February, a story appeared behind the paywall of the Herald Sun, reporting that Jeffrey Kevin Mitchell hoped to be the first person to, quote, exploit the new no body, no parole laws by leading police to Andrew Preston's remains. We've spoken to victims' families about these laws before because it's, of course, incredibly disheartening when a convicted killer is paroled without disclosing the location of a victim's remains. It generally means the family will never know where the body is. The no body, no parole laws are thought to offer some incentive to perpetrators to offer at least that much cooperation at some stage. It's kind of a weird story, this one, though. It says that Jeffrey Mitchell approached authorities at some point last year with an offer to show them where the remains of Andrew Preston were located. Subsequent to that, he was escorted, according to the story, by detectives to the Powelltown area where the search was unsuccessful. The report quotes Mitchell's children as saying that he wanted to help and cooperate in finding the missing man and has even pledged to try to mount his own search if released. The story says things like Mitchell has organised a full-time job to start when he is freed and lined up accommodation. Mitchell's family claimed police had made a report supporting his release, but the Adult Parole Board has rejected this. The Sunday Herald Sun has been told police wrote to acknowledge he had tried to find the body and did not offer an opinion on whether his parole should be approved. So, the story sort of goes around in circles, and really and truly, it seems like it's just a story about another bloke trying desperately to get parole. Whatever you think of Jeff Mitchell and his macho bullshit and Andrew Preston and his drugs and couch surfing, or Leanne believing her family for a young, drugged-out dude she worked with, or her lying coward of a brother, Gavin. In the end, the weirdly written story behind the paywall reminds me of the innocent characters in this story. The ones who no doubt took the weird update to the paper a couple of weeks ago. Jeff and Leanne's kids. I mean, they'd be adults now, but still young adults, who lived through it all. And now here they are, 17 years later, fighting like hell to bring their dad home. I just find myself really feeling for them. And for their sake, I really hope Jeffrey Mitchell gets paroled. Thank you for downloading this episode of Australian True Crime. Thank you so much to our patrons for your support. We'll be back next week with another episode.